Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 137.
This week on the podcast, the 114th Congress prepares to castrate both pigs and themselves in the start of their new session.
And the new jobs numbers prove that no matter how great the economy claims to be, broke people don't care. Ugh, idiot poor people and their dumb need to eat.
The Romney family gathers in their ski slope car elevator dressage stage to ponder his presidential future, slash remind Americans that Jeb Bush doesn't know their pain.
And Staten Island is acting as Staten Island is wont to act. You get it.
North Korea is now facing two scourges, balloons filled with copies of The Interview and terrorist sharks.
And Kirby DeLauder is the man named Kirby DeLauder who proved that local journalism is not dead. Kirby DeLauder.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Make that your New Year's resolution.
That's right. Make it your New
Happy
Year's
New
resolution.
Happy New Year,
everybody. Happy New Year. Make it your New Year's resolution to follow the news, which is something that you could do by listening to our podcast.
Right.
And then also, put a bookmark on our website or something. Stuff's going on, you know.
Yeah.
Find us on Facebook.
We're here for you.
We're here for you. We're going to tell you what happened this week and the weeks that we did podcast.
Yeah. We had a little bit of a holiday break.
We did.
While we were in different parts of the country and taking some time away and
celebrating
whatever.
the national holidays that everyone celebrates,
right,
like New Year's and things like that.
Right.
So that's why we weren't here.
Right.
But we have returned to you just in time to tell you all about the start of the new Congress.
Yes.
Which is
it's terrible. I don't know why I'm clapping.
No.
It's like the worst Congress that we've had in like
couldn't
God
be
knows
less
how
clapworthy.
No. It's the worst.
But it's happening.
Yeah.
And it's funny. It's not... That's why you clap.
Tragically funny.
Because it's tragically funny.
Yeah.
It begins in what is an actual clapworthy moment.
Yes.
With John Boehner just barely getting reelected speaker.
Yeah.
After Louis Gohmert led like a breakaway faction to try to get a Tea Party speaker installed. And I was almost like, if this happens, does Nancy Pelosi get to be the speaker? Like, is the second place person suddenly thrust into the limelight? Because when the majority party splits... I mean, then the Democrats would have more votes, you know?
They didn't even really
split
so much. They didn't have enough people
There were only
all,
25 of them.
But it was still the closest that the opposition has ever been in the modern era. Something like 90 years or something like that. That they've been, doing it this way, I think, where the speaker gets elected. But, so that's pretty... It was pretty embarrassing. Even though it wasn't, there was never any real chance that Louis Gohmert was going to be the Speaker of the House, although... Talk about something that would have been clapworthy.
Oh,
I mean, because he's one of the nuttiest people out there.
That could have been that could have entertained us for literal years.
The next 2 years.
The next 2 years would have been spent entertained.
Television
could have gone off the air. Movies could have halted production.
I know.
It wouldn't have mattered.
I could tell you what would have happened had Louis Gohmert become the Speaker of the House in 2014. Or 15.
Right.
Nancy Pelosi would have been the Speaker of the House in 2016.
Exactly.
Because they would have only lasted 2 years.
The answer is nothing.
That would have, right, exactly. So, Boehner gets to keep his job, embarrassingly so. But that's how the week kicked off, people.
Yeah, that's the first thing that happens in the new Congress.
Right.
Is they almost lose their speaker because their own party can't agree on anything.
And the things that happened subsequently were just as insane.
And uniformly terrible.
Right, because as they said they were going to do, the first order of business after embarrassingly re-electing John Boehner.
This is a country, by the way, we have racial tensions boiling over, we have epidemics of gun violence, we have, Ebola, just potentially,
but
I mean the world has Ebola. Like, there are issues out there in
terrorism.
Right. We have this massacre in France that's occurring this week. I mean, there's shit going down.
Right.
Their first order of business, the most important thing that this Republican Congress needed to face before they could really, put their nose to the grindstone, approving Keystone.
Make sure that we could get an oil pipeline going through the country.
Thank God.
Through the entirety of the country.
This project, which will briefly bring a few construction jobs to America and then subsequently fail to improve our lives in any way.
Right, well, they keep bringing up
the most important thing.
They keep bringing up that stat about how it's going to create 42,000 jobs or something, which everyone has now discounted.
Briefly.
Just very briefly. It's going to create...
The pipeline will create jobs, and then we'll just have a fucking pipeline that is not going to lower our gas prices and is in no way of benefit
to us. And it's using the tar sands oil from Canada, which is terrible, as we've talked about. Everybody knows why this is
bad. We all know it's bad.
And it's ridiculous. 28 Democrats voted for it. There's too many Democrats that are thinking that this is sort of an economic boom. cartoon.
This should have been like, one of those things where 28 Republicans voted against it. I hate when you see a statistic. There's enough Republicans there, guys. Right. You don't need to vote for this.
Yeah.
There are no Democrats that need to vote for this to ensure it passes.
Right.
That the Republicans have it covered.
I was going to say, you didn't have to vote with them on this.
No.
Yeah.
Just don't do it. Just say no. Abstain. Yeah, who cares? Exactly. What? Like, this is absurd. The Senate's going to vote on it next week. They're going to be equally terrible, but not as equally terrible because they don't quite have enough of a majority to overpower a veto of this bill. So they're trying to sort of round up some Democrats, and I just feel like the Democrats already had their embarrassing moment where Mary Landrieu at the last minute tried to pass this.
I know.
Thank God that failed.
Yeah.
But also, like, they're not going to be like, yeah, no, we'll cooperate. We love cooperating. We want this pipeline as much as you do. Like, that's not going to happen.
Exactly.
The reason that they were able to suddenly rush this through is because the vote happened on Friday. And the reason it didn't happen on Monday is because there was a Nebraska Supreme Court ruling that they were waiting to hear that basically removed the last major legal obstacle.
Right. And we've talked about this case
routing
on the podcast before. But basically what it was is there were some landowners that sued, I think, the state, the governor, right? Because the governor basically had said that the pipeline could go through Nebraska. But in the Nebraska laws or something, the governor can't approve that. It has to be like a...
Because they're using eminent domain to...
Right, exactly.
To route this. And this is for a private company. So it has to be in the public interest to use eminent domain. So that's... There's a lot of sort of disagreement about whether this constitutes a public utility
or not. So that was being challenged in the Nebraska Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But now they weighed in this week. And so then the House could
vote on
it.
They said, fuck people.
Right. They don't
care. Put your fucking pipeline anywhere you want.
The governor can just decide any old pipeline route through the state.
Why not?
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Your land is meaningless to us.
Yeah.
Which in Nebraska, I feel like doesn't go over well.
Well,
people in Nebraska are obsessed with having freedom.
Freedom and
their
and
land. Their land. Because
all there is in Nebraska is land.
Cattle and land.
Land. Flat land for days, it seems like.
So that's
Nebraska,
all they have there.
Not a big state. I drove through Nebraska once, only once, on my way to California.
That was enough.
It seemed like almost like the entire 20 hours that it takes to drive to California was driving through Nebraska, which is just not geography.
No.
Like, that's not...
Although I would argue that your claim that Nebraska is not a big state is flawed based on it being a much bigger state than any state on my side of the country.
Oh, well, fair enough. Yeah.
You know, the Midwest seems...
It's not even a big Midwestern state, though,
I mean,
in terms of...
It seems...
massive.
Like, it goes on... Like, the whole Midwest seems like it takes the entire country.
Yeah, well, okay.
So, I mean, it's too big of a state for them not to have any people, which is the problem in Nebraska.
They don't have any people.
Right.
There's no people there. Yeah.
In any case, that aside, the executive branch has been... for the last 6 years, Obama's been sort of wavering on what he's going to do about this. In the last year, he sort of indicated that he probably is going to veto it. And part of it is that he will veto, like, this Keystone legislation.
That's the thing.
The House's Keystone bill is he's absolutely not going to pass.
Right. Well, and it's not even so much that it's the House's. I think what he is sort of, like, still waiting for is that there's still, like, a lot of stuff that the State Department is supposed to weigh in on this. Like, it's not Congress who passes pipeline legislation.
No.
Like, that's not what happened. So that's why they're saying... Josh Ernst, his spokesperson, said that they were going to veto this. That doesn't necessarily mean that he won't have it go forward at some point, but he's, like, waiting for the State Department to chime in. He's waiting for John Kerry to chime in. There's supposedly going to be a big report about it. Like,
had been blaming this Nebraska case for not chiming in, and now they're sort of like, well, but now, you know, the State Department's review of the pipeline had been halted for the Nebraska case, so now they've got to finish that, and no one knows what John Kerry is going to say.
Right.
I have a personal theory, which is that he's going to veto the pipeline because he doesn't want his legacy to be
I totally agree.
Tarnished
been,
by this.
He's been moving on a lot of climate change stuff very aggressively recently.
This is
recently,
where his legacy is.
And I think so,
he's
too.
He's the first modern president, and this is where the first modern president has a legacy on the environment and a legacy on gay rights and a legacy on sort of, you know, bridging the racial gaps that exist in this country. Like, there's certain things that a modern president has to sort of acknowledge his legacy on, and this is got to be one of them.
Yeah. Well, and I also just think that the fact that he hasn't had it move forward already. I mean, he and the State Department could have decided on this years ago.
Right. He's been in a lame duck session.
The fact that he keeps pushing it off just leads me to believe that his intention is to either say no or to just keep pushing it off and let somebody else deal with it.
Yeah. Which is
Hopefully I feel not like, Hillary Clinton.
Hopefully not Hillary Clinton. But also, I feel like
we'll have a pipeline if it's her.
Right. Wait, that's day one business for her, too, probably.
Yeah.
She probably has a friend on Wall Street who's already on the phone with her about this.
Yeah, some corporation who's going to build the thing or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
Yeah. Right. But I don't see the Obama administration gaining anything from passing this. So they I feel like it's worth it for them to just sort of keep pushing it off or to veto. I mean, they're definitely going to veto this version of the bill.
Right.
But to sort
it's
of
it's not
keep,
over.
Keep the
just
veto.
Just because they veto this doesn't mean it's done.
But it is, they don't, the Senate does not have a way of overriding their veto. So it is, this incarnation
they don't have 67
is
votes.
At least over once they veto this one.
Right.
And they're going to veto this one.
Yeah.
So in any case, the other thing that they did was they got immediately busy putting anti-abortion legislation.
Really busy. Introduced five bills.
Five bills.
In a week. That's one a day, people.
Yeah, that's right. Trent Franks in the House and Marsha Blackburn.
Marsha Blackburn. Come on.
Like, introduce a classic ban on abortion after 20 weeks, which is something that the House passed in 2013. It violates Roe v. Wade because it bans abortions earlier than a fetus would be viable. You know, Roe v. Wade defines when a fetus is viable and when after that, you're allowed to ban abortions.
Right.
But as long as the fetus is not viable, you're not legally allowed to ban abortions. And, this defines defines the moment that it's no longer legal as being much earlier than the Supreme Court ruling. So it's not constitutional per se, but it's something that a lot of states have gotten up to.
Remember,
we talked about this in Arizona. We talked about this in a bunch of the South.
And this is also a thing that they are getting up to. And on some level, it sort of is one of those things where there are a lot of people on the left who sort of, I mean, while yes, we don't feel we should be getting involved in doing anything that violates Roe v. Wade, abortions after 20 weeks are just very rare. It sort of isn't happening a ton. There are a lot of people on the left who are sort of just almost all right, if this is what we need to give you to let you feel you had something here, then this
is
would
not,
be the one thing.
This is not a thing that will solve the problem of them trying to ban abortions.
No, it's not.
And if you have an abortion after 20 weeks, it's a fucking emergency. You don't do that for the, you don't
no,
wait 20
right,
weeks and then
is.
You're
like,
so
yes.
This really only bans abortions for people that are in a really fucking terrible situation.
Yes, exactly.
So that's why it's a sort of dangerous bill in that sense, because it defines, you know, it makes a definition that can be very dangerous to women's health.
Right.
A fetus health is one thing.
Right.
Women's health is what they're attacking
here,
and they don't care about women's
health. They care about fetus health.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, they don't even care about fetus health.
No, they just
care that women can't do things. They just care about sexist agenda stuff. In any case, Mitch McConnell has promised that he will bring this to a vote in the Senate, because the last time this didn't come to a vote in the Senate. So that's what was going on in the House.
Yeah.
Now, in the Senate, they had their own slew of anti-abortion legislation that came to the floor, thanks to our own, not our own, he's not ours, David Vitter, who is an impossible asshole.
Oh, God.
He introduced a bill, you know, bills that would bar Planned Parenthood from receiving federal funds. They love this one.
Yeah.
Require abortion providers to have admitting privileges at local hospitals. We've talked at length about why this is a terrible idea.
Uh-huh.
Ban abortions performed on the basis of gender, which is how large of a problem is that?
I know.
This is not China. We don't have a cultural imperative to be doing this. That's a crazy thing. That's a banning abortions, you know, that might take place on the moon. It's just an irrelevant thing that has nothing to do with anything. And then allow hospitals and doctors and nurses to refuse to provide abortion care, even in cases of emergency. Which, combined with requiring abortion providers to have admitting privileges at local hospitals, is just a fucking shit show.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
It's a recipe for
abortion disaster.
Abortion disaster and women.
And women disaster.
Death.
Yeah, woman death.
Woman
death. It's a recipe for woman death.
That's what it is.
And so, in any case, these are all things that they've tried at the state level. Almost all of them have been overruled or blocked by judges. Overruled. That's not. I just used a random legal word there. That's not the right word. Judges have blocked these for the most part because they are pretty blatantly unconstitutional.
Overturned.
Overturned was the word I was
looking
for.
I was going to say. I was like, wait a minute.
That's
right,
so
isn't
wrong.
It? And then I was like, no, it's not.
No, overruled is what you shout in a court.
Overruled.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. That's not what they were doing.
Bang
with
your gavel.
Yeah, you got to bang it. If you are shouting overruled, you have a gavel, which is why I know that that's not what it's called when I am referring to someone else's action. But in any case, these laws have been blocked time and again. They would likely spur legal battles. They would probably not ever actually go into effect. But they are very dangerous precedents to set.
I was going
to
say,
even as they do go into effect.
But as you
briefly.
And I have often said the whole point of passing these laws is not to have them go into effect. It's to have them go to the courts.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the whole plan.
You find the right court. And then we might have the right court now. Exactly. You know, I mean, you don't have an abortion, you end up getting the ruling that you want.
Exactly. So that's evil and terrible.
Yes.
And all of these people
should
go fuck themselves.
Yeah, exactly. The other hilarious thing that happened this week, because as you know, when the new Congress comes in and gets sworn in, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance. Joe Biden all sort of, you know, he talks, swears them in and they come through and he sort of like, you know, touches them inappropriately and makes, you know, probably inappropriate remarks about like their dress that they're wearing or something if they're a woman, or says something about their son or daughter that's
things that would have been really charming in 1950 that are no longer appropriate.
Exactly. Yeah. Bless his heart. Yeah. But other things happen too. People give people gifts and they welcome them and there's parties and there's all sorts of things, whatever. So Joni Ernst, as we know from Iowa, my dear state, sadly elected the nuttiest woman around. And she sort of came to prominence with a insane ad that she had that was also like a genius ad too.
For Iowa.
Because
wouldn't have worked in every state, because but it certainly
she,
was
like,
a genius
came
ad
from
for Iowa.
Farming families or something like that. Anyway, but her first campaign ad was, she spoke right to camera and she said, "I'm Joni Ernst. I grew up castrating hogs on an Iowa farm, so when I get to Washington, I'll know how to cut pork." Which, I mean, I'm gonna give her some cleverness points here.
It's too insane to process.
But I mean, anyway, bless her heart. So when she arrived into Washington this week, Lindsey Graham, had a gift for her, which is a hog castration tool. And it's big, by the way. Like, it was a very large, like, plaque that you would sort of, like, have to, like, you know, hang on the wall. You'd have to have a professional hanger for this plaque on the wall, basically. So, and he gives her that, and then there's, like, an inscription on it, and it says, "Make 'em squeal, Joni."
Horrible. By the way, when we refer to her from now on, I think that we should refer to her as conspiracy theorist Joni Ernst. Like, we should never use her real title. We should
she's not to be taken seriously.
That's what she is.
Right. Yeah.
But I would like her to just be known as conspiracy. Like, that's her professional. Her career is conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
Conspiracy theorist Joni Ernst says. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. She is going to be making them squeal and horrible ways where she just comes up with crazy nonsense to say, and everyone's just like, "Can we shut this woman up?"
Yeah.
And they can't.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, she'll have a bill soon, like, making sure that the United Nations doesn't steal farmland from people in Iowa. Like, that's a thing that she's like, you know, like, she's like,
into that.
She's into that. I mean,
she's very worried about the United Nations.
Oh, a lot of people on the far right are worried about that. But she's
like
the
vocally... She's the voice of that concern, and it's the most nutty concern that there is out there.
It's a fake concern.
Speaking of, by the way, this is not on our list, but did you see that article about women senators, the experience of women senators? Was it Politico or Washington?
At the pool.
At the pool?
Yes.
But it was like a whole article about all of the different ways in which women, like female senators, have been like excluded and treated in condescending and patronizing manners for like the entire length of their having been female senators.
Yeah.
But
the pool one was
with an anecdote. Who was it?
Kay Hagan, I think.
Who came into the Senate and decided she wanted to
use the
pool, like a person who has access to a pool would want to.
Right.
And they told her she couldn't because some of the male senators like to swim naked. And then Chuck Schumer got involved and was like, "Okay, guys,
I know
that's not it.
Put some fucking pants on."
Yeah, like, we can all swim in the pool. Let's not. It's not a males only pool. But
Not one United States senator that I would want to be seeing.
Not a single one.
Man or woman.
Zero of them.
There's a few men in the House.
But definitely no
one
in the Senate.
Aaron Schock? What's that guy?
I don't know.
That guy who's from Illinois. He's like a model.
Oh.
He's a Republican.
Of course he is. Yeah. You look that good. You don't have empathy. You don't have to learn to have empathy. But as we're going to discuss later, too, like the average age of a person in the Senate is like 100 years old or older.
Yeah.
Because
we're going to talk
a little bit about some age discussion in the Senate that I am finding fault with.
Yeah, we're going to offer some age discrimination on the podcast this week.
In any case, another fun thing.
This happened not this week.
No,
this
happened
while we were gone, but it's important enough.
But this was an important scandal that it wasn't so important that we posted about, like, the Michael Grimm thing, which we are going to talk about, but we also posted that around Christmas as our holiday message to you. This is more of a post-Christmas gift.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Steve Scalise, who's from Louisiana, and is actually, he has a
He's the majority whip.
Yeah, exactly. He came under fire because he apparently spoke at a white supremacist gathering in 2002.
Yeah.
Now, claims he didn't know that's what he was speaking at, right. I think, initially.
It is a group that was founded by David Duke, as in the head of the Ku Klux Klan.
Right.
And my favorite part about this story was not even Scalise's involvement in the story, because I'm not surprised to hear that he spoke at a white supremacist gathering.
No.
It was the fact that people, like, rushed to his aid to apologize for it. Not apologize, but make excuses for it.
Yeah, exactly.
The entire Republican caucus was like, no, you guys, you don't understand. Yeah. He's such a nice guy. He's not a racist. He's a black friend. Like, it was things like that that were getting said.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, a whole bunch of newly elected people in the House followed John Boehner's lead and were just like, no, it's so unfortunate that you guys are making such a big deal out of this.
Yes.
Like, he's got a good heart. He's got a good character.
Also, it was a long time ago, too.
Yes, it was a long time ago. He doesn't have a racist bone in his body because one black colleague stuck up for him or something. Yep. And then Newt Gingrich got involved. Uh-huh. And Newt Gingrich invoked Jeremiah Wright.
Oh, boy.
While appealing to Obama about this. And he said, and this is where I take issue with everything that was said about this case, I mean, about the situation so far, but I mostly take issue with this. The president, who for years went to a church whose pastor said stunningly hateful things about America, the president explained he didn't believe any of them, okay? And we all gave him a pass.
Oh, we did?
We didn't.
It was always talked about for months.
Right, like, we gave him a pass. Like, me and Brent gave him a pass.
Right.
You, Newt Gingrich, did not give him a pass.
No.
The fact that you're invoking it now proves that.
Yeah.
So, let's not, he got strung up for this.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Wright got strung up for this.
Yeah.
You're allowed to string up somebody who even unknowingly speaks to a white supremacist group, because that is a person who went and, like, got in bed with a hate group.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, you're allowed to be like, listen, don't speak to hate groups. That's not a good plan.
Yeah.
Like, you're an asshole for speaking to a hate group, even if you didn't know.
Because
you should know.
Yeah,
you gotta know.
Exactly.
You know.
And then I think, didn't David Duke also, like, come out and sort of, like, stick up for him? Obviously he would, because, like, that's what you would do. But I think that he had said something too, like, if you, like, string him up too much, then, like, then I'll release the names of all the,
he threatened to
release the names of, like, all the people that he has met with, like, Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah.
And then,
which, P.S., I'd love.
It's not shocked. I would like that, too.
If he would.
I wasn't shocked by that, too. I think a lot of people were I can't imagine the Democrats would have talked to him. And it's like, all right, everybody, get over yourself. I can too. I mean,
let's not pretend there's not a racist Democrat talking
to David Duke.
I'm not afraid to pretend that. That seems like it is happening.
Definitely happening.
Possibly not even in the South. Possibly way far north. I mean, there's so many places that you might find a racist Democrat. It boggles the mind.
Yeah,
so none of these things would shock me.
Yeah.
And this is the part where Brent tells you about the job interviews.
I
told Brent that he could both read the article and then report everything in it.
I always hear about it on the news, and I always am like, oh, well, that's, like, an important thing. Like, everybody's always concerned about the economy, so we have to talk about the jobs numbers, right?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Don't
go ahead.
Don't look at me like that. Glaring
tell
at
them,
me.
Tell them all about the jobs numbers.
Fine, I will. 252,000 jobs. Which is wrong, probably, because next month we'll tell you that it was wrong.
Because this is the reason that I don't care about the jobs numbers. It's because they're wrong.
It's
not because they wouldn't theoretically be good information to have.
I know.
It's because they're not correct information. It's like reporting on, like, the, you know, number of asteroids that hit, like, another galaxy. Like, I'm into space metaphors today.
You are.
I already talked about the moon.
Yeah, abortions on the moon.
Abortions on the moon.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, this is just, like, speculating on any old thing.
No, I get it.
How many ants are there in my
house? I know. More than 252,000, it sounds like, from the ant.
I know, I went on an ant murder spree this week. The ants got confused because it rained. They were like, where do we go? Where do we go?
Yeah.
And then they came into my bathtub.
Lila's bathtub.
Right.
Hooray.
Which is not a place to escape water, P.S.
No, it's not. No, that's...
If you're an ant and you're looking for a place to get out of the rain...
Aren't ants supposed to be smarter than that?
I thought
ants are smart.
I don't know that... These ants were not geniuses.
No, clearly
they're
not.
Now dead.
No.
So, screw you, ants. Anyway, moving on. Jobs numbers.
Yay! Unemployment rate down from 5.8% to 5.6%.
Really, just getting up there.
The one thing that I will say is important about these, even though that 252,000 number is probably fake, 2014 is now the biggest job growth year that we've had since 1999, which is pretty huge. And there are a lot of things that sort of, like, point to the economy getting better right now. We had like a huge, like the GDP growth last year or in the fourth quarter was really
unemployment
big.
Has been going down for a long time.
Unemployment has been going down. The stock market has been going crazy recently. But also we've got low energy prices right now. So everybody is talking about like how that's going to like put more money in people's pockets. So, you know, people are buying more things. There's a lot of good signs of the economy right now. But one sign that was terrible again this month, after it sort of upticked a little bit in November.
But not enough.
Not enough. Wages way down again in December.
Well, of course, yeah, that was all contingent work, seasonal contingent work. Like, that's not real jobs that got created, first of all. So even though that number is fake, the number in that number that is real is not even real because it's fake.
And this is a thing that I think that people are going to have to, that politicians specifically are going to have to specifically deal with, because they, I still don't think they get it yet.
You're right.
Because all of these good, you know, economic numbers signal like a huge recovery that we have going on right now. And when you ask Joe Blow on the street about the economy, they think that it's, you know,
in the shitter.
In the shitter.
Because it is. This is why we often contend the economy is a fake thing to talk about anyway.
Right.
Because wages are the only thing that really, like, affect people in a sort of tangible way day to day.
People only care about their economy.
Yeah.
And their economy starts
directly.
It's the same
shitty economy that we've had since 2008.
And it starts directly with how much they're getting paid.
Exactly.
They don't, even if they have more money in their pocket to buy because gas is cheaper, they still are looking at their paycheck and they're thinking, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm working a full-time job and I can't fucking eat.
Exactly.
Like, so.
Well, and this also, I think, points to a larger issue as well, which is the economic disparity that continues to grow when these recoveries occur and wages stay stagnant.
Right.
Because that is, economic inequality is the populist issue that I think will win the presidency.
I agree.
If Elizabeth Warren runs for president.
It makes this all seem like a false recovery, too. You know what I mean?
It
like,
is,
you know,
sort of a false recovery.
You can't tell somebody that the economy is recovering when they're poor.
Well, it means nothing. The GDP growth means nothing if wages are stagnant. Nothing means anything if wages are stagnant.
Yeah.
And if wages are stagnant and the GDP is growing and, you know, money is getting made and the stock market's going crazy, then only rich people are getting that money.
Yeah.
Like, that money that is back out in the world only exists in the hands of rich people. So that helps nobody.
Yeah.
And that's a populist issue. That's an issue that could win the presidency. That's all of these things. And everyone is so impressed with themselves for recovering the economy for rich people that they've forgotten about regular people.
No, it's absolutely true. I was listening. I watched you'll appreciate this. I watched a speech yesterday because Elizabeth Warren gave a speech at the AFL-CIO. They were having a wages event. Like, that's what it was. It was called wages something or other. Like, had
this, by the way, is why we need the AFL-CIO to exist.
Yeah.
This is why we need unions, because they're the ones who talk about this shit.
And she said, gave the stat, which was, I found absolutely staggering, is that after the Great Depression, up until 1980, something like 70% of the growth went to the bottom 90%. The rest of it went to the top 10%.
Right.
Since 1980, 0% of the growth has gone to the bottom 90%. It has all gone into the top 10%. So, like, we are not the bottom, and to even say bottom 90, like, it's not the,
the 90%
of people is not the bottom anything.
No, it's the whole thing.
The whole thing are not getting any recovery that we've had, and not even recovery, recent recovery, but
even
in the last 30
years.
The
benefit of the Clinton years, the benefit of all of those.
That's a generation.
Yeah.
Of people.
Our generation.
That's how old we are.
Right, exactly.
We were born in 1980.
Right.
1981.
Right, 1983. We were born in the early 80s.
Right.
And so we have never seen a time when the bottom 90% has gained anything.
Gained a penny.
Not a single penny.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful.
That is why she can win the presidency.
Yeah. No.
You know.
But this is, I think, an issue that it doesn't benefit anyone in the old guard to talk about because they're part of the problem. I mean, that's what was the issue with the Clinton years. The Clintons cut welfare. The Clintons did all these things that didn't benefit the bottom 90% and did all these other things that benefited Wall Street. And so it looked like we had this booming economy and only rich people were getting richer and poor people were staying where they are or getting poorer. And that was during the greatest period of growth that we've seen in our lifetimes. Like, this is all bullshit.
Yeah,
the economy
it was fake growth.
Is bullshit.
Yeah. Agreed.
Agreed.
See, that was an important story to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Screw
well, it gave
you.
Me a chance to say that the economy is fake, which I love to do.
I know. Yeah.
I know, when I have a couple of friends who are a little more literal-minded than us, who are always like, how can you say that? And I'm, like, getting to the point now where I'm sort of like, even literally the economy is fake. Like, I get how I was saying something to be, you know, content. Like,
right, at first,
I was
exaggerating. That I thought was right. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not exaggerating, really, anymore.
No.
Because everything that we hold true is fake.
Yeah.
And trickle-down economics doesn't work, guys.
Doesn't work.
We've proven that time and again. So it seems like...
Yeah.
It seems like this is the wrong strategy.
Yeah.
Because this is trickle-down economics.
Yeah.
That's it. They won.
Exactly.
The Hoovers of the world won.
Yeah. I think that, and we're about to talk about elections coming up too for 2016 specifically, because we had some 2016 contender news. Going back really quickly to that Elizabeth Warren speech.
Yes.
Running for president. I still contend that she's running for president because she went into a lot more biographical info in that speech than I feel like you really need to when you're talking to, like, Lizzie. The AFL-CIO. Yeah. Like, it was very much sort of like a speech that you would give to sort of, like, give your background to people. Like, because she was talking about the importance of wages, and she was like, when she was 12 and her three brothers were off in the Navy, her dad had a heart attack and her mom had to go and get a minimum wage job at Sears, and it was the minimum wage job that saved their family from losing the house and the car. I mean, like, that's a story that you tell to people when you're running for president.
Yes. Yeah, but you're not just trying to...
You just don't show up in...
the darkest hour of my life.
No, you don't
no
show
reason,
up at just like an AFL-CIO event and then, like, go into, like, a sob story about, like, when you were 12 and your family almost
this
lost the house.
This is her version of John Boehner sweeping floors at a bar or whatever he was up to. Weeping about how much he loves America.
Exactly.
Weeping about the success of his own triumph.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what that is. And I mean, what I have something coming up on this next story that supports that, because even the other contenders are considering her a contender.
Yes, exactly.
Because Romney basically almost announced his candidacy this week.
We're getting a lot of almost announcements for things, which is really great, because George Bush almost announced.
Right.
Bernie Sanders has
not
already
George,
basically announced. Jeb, thank you.
We've had enough Georges. We can't do that again. There's already been two.
There's not another one.
There's not another one. We ran out of those. So Romney was speaking to a group of donors, which is...
Right, Wall Street types.
Right, which is... You would only need those
probably
donors
talking
if you were
about how
for president.
47% of the people in the country are moochers.
I mean, terrible moochers. And said, I want to be president. That was on Friday. He said that his wife, Anne, has changed her mind because she was against his run, the last we heard.
Okay.
Which was a fake thing.
Hold on a second.
People's spouses are getting blamed constantly for them running or not running.
And we have talked about this many times before. If there is one human currently who is a U.S. citizen that wants anyone to be president more than anyone else on the earth, it's Anne Romney wanting Mitt Romney to be president.
That couldn't be more true.
Come on. She wants to go to the White House desperately, that woman.
Yeah. No, Anne Romney was being blamed by one sexist, obnoxious, you know, dumb husband, Mitt Romney, for his indecision.
Right.
And now,
they're an easy out.
They're an easy out. Yeah, and his children are, quote, still split.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares about
them?
They're not
either.
Split. Your children don't know. They're just fucking children. It's, you know. In any case, advisors say that he discussed the prospect while they were holidaying in Park City skiing, which is exactly the kind of information that they should refrain from telling people in the future.
Right,
as I said to you earlier, that's like telling us that they talked about it in their car elevator. That's not...
Lie and say that he was telling them at a Waffle House or something.
Or
like, I mean,
a soup kitchen. I mean, wherever you need to pretend they were. Don't tell us they were skiing in Park City.
No.
Come on. This is 101. This is what lost him the presidency last time. And it's like they're like the Hillary's people. They just keep going down the same dumb road. But the other thing that I'm seeing is a little bit of an indication of his... Remember when we learned that Mitt Romney was a total asshole as a teenager?
Yes, that's right.
I think that his weird issues with Jeb Bush are sort of the grown-up version of that.
Yes.
Because the real reason, if we're going to be really honest with ourselves and with Mitt Romney's self, the real reason that Mitt Romney is talking about running for president is because Jeb has
Bush.
Basically declared.
They don't like each other.
They don't like each other. They're like schoolboy rivals.
They are.
And so he's like, well, I don't think that Bush can beat Clinton. P.S. If anyone can beat Clinton, it's not Mitt Romney. Like, I get that, like, Clinton is beatable. I'm certainly not standing up for her running for president because I'm over that and we know that. But, like, if there's anything worse than a Jeb Bush-Hillary Clinton match, it's a Mitt Romney-Hillary Clinton match.
Big time.
That's worse. Because Jeb Bush at least comes from, like, a political sort of... A stronger political point or standpoint than Mitt Romney, the fake governor of Massachusetts for like 1 second, who otherwise has just been quoted as saying insensitive things in the press and going skiing a lot.
And has,
like,
no political soul at all.
Exactly.
I mean, we know that he will go wherever the wind
takes
him.
And the man can't even sit on a stool comfortably. He's about as stiff as a person can possibly be.
Yeah.
So, like, if there's anyone who could possibly be the same type of person as Mitt Romney, but better, it's Jeb Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I think that still makes Jeb Bush a terrible type of person. I would caution the Republicans that that's not the road they want to go down. But I would definitely say that Mitt Romney is the other road that they don't want to go down.
Yeah.
Because he's like Jeb Bush, but worse.
Yeah.
He's from a political family, but a Mormon political family. Mm-hmm. That's a landmine still. Doesn't matter how far ahead we get in any other realm.
From Mexico.
Yeah, a Mormon family from Mexico. Well, the other thing is, because I told you I recently read a book about the death of Joseph Smith, didn't I?
Oh. You did.
I am not.
Yeah, because you were telling me because they went through they went through Iowa or something.
Yeah,
like
they
that.
Went.
Weren't you telling me about that
they
or
had,
something like that?
They had a run-in in Iowa.
Yeah, they did.
And they were mostly in Illinois.
Yeah.
It's a wacky story, and I can see how people are still having a hard time buying it. It is real fucking crazy.
I know.
In any case, so that's always going to be a problem for them. And like, so Mitt Romney is just like the poor man's Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
The very rich man's Jeb Bush.
Right, exactly.
In any case, he invited all of his future donors or his hope, because they've been at war over donors, because obviously they kind of appeal to the same type
donors.
Of person.
Right.
So he's invited them all to an intimate gathering of Wall Street titans, politicos, and government officials.
I have a feeling
called
that
the E2 Summit.
I have a feeling that these people probably have enough money to go around to both of them.
That's true. But I think that this is sort of a dangerous thing for them to get involved in, because it never benefits anyone to have two of the exact same candidate in a primary.
No.
Because the votes split, and then you don't get anyone.
Yeah.
If we learned anything from the jungle primary in Waxman's old seat, it's that you don't want all of the same people, six of the same people, running in a primary when there's only one Republican.
Because I would contend on some level, and not necessarily personality-wise, but in terms of political-wise looking for the same type of money person, Chris Christie probably falls into this category with them as well.
Yeah. And that is like, there's so many potential names that are getting discussed that are flawed in so many ways that are all going to be looking for these donors.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense to do it this way.
No, it
doesn't. But the thing that I was most excited about with this story, because I'd love it if Mitt Romney ran again.
Oh, great.
Mitt Romney was an idiot the first time. I just can't imagine he got...
Right, he had so many gems for us the last time.
Remember,
he can't sit on a stool. The trees were all the right height. The lemonade was lemon wet cold, remember? I mean, like, he was just too ridiculous of a person to even... Ways previously unexplored.
The most casual possible circumstances found him, like, stiffly unable to describe lemonade. Like, that's the kind of guy I want the Republicans to run.
Yeah.
That's a guy who will openly declare that he hates 47% of Americans is the kind of guy that the Republicans should run, because then they definitely can't elect a candidate.
Yeah.
The thing that I was most excited about them is Spencer Zwick, who was his national finance chairman in 2012, went to this Friday meeting with Romney and was quoted as saying, I believe Mitt Romney is too much of a patriot to sit on the sidelines and concede the presidency to Hillary Clinton or Elizabeth Warren when he knows that he can fix the country. They're already talking about Elizabeth Warren as if it's a done deal.
Yeah.
So I think it is a done deal. I think everyone knows what everyone knows, and they know that Mitt Romney is running for president because he said that he wants to be president, that Jeb Bush is running for president because he's comes from a family of presidents and he looks like an idiot. That Hillary Clinton is going to be president because everyone's just talking, or wants to be president because everyone's just talking about that, and she doesn't even have any say in it. And that Liz Warren is going to be a candidate for president. If that's the two names that you come up with from the Democrats, fuck everyone else.
That's it.
That's it. Those are the two names. She is the second name, which is so much bigger than being the eighth name or the non on the list name.
Right, exactly. He didn't say Joe Biden.
He didn't say Martin O'Malley. He didn't say any of the people that are the people.
Yeah.
Certainly he didn't say Brian Schweitzer.
No.
No one's saying Brian Schweitzer. He's already basically declared. I mean, he's running for president.
I know.
But, you know, no one cares about him. In any case.
That dog won't hunt.
That's right.
not hunting. Not a hunting dog.
Not a hunting dog. It's a bolo tie wearing dog, but it's not a hunting dog.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah. Oh, God. And sad news, though, especially because we're Californians, but also just sad news for the country.
Progressives and people.
And people, right, exactly. Barbara Boxer's retiring. She's not running for re-election in 2016.
Now,
when
Brent told me this, I was like, what? And he was like, well, she's really old. At which point I was like, have you looked at how old everyone in the Senate is? Dianne Feinstein is 81.
Right.
Barbara Boxer's 74.
I know.
You have another decade before you need to get involved in this, Barbara Boxer.
I know.
If you're going to be the senator who's an institution from California, you gotta fucking ride it out. Sorry about that.
Right.
I'm so pissed about this. Because now, what are they leaving
She's 74. She wants to be with her grandkids. She released the video with her.
Come on. She's 74 and she's a senator.
Yeah, like, all right.
Fair this enough. Is what, if you're a senator.
Fly home on the weekends.
Fly home on the weekends.
Stupid grandkids.
Exactly. If you're an effective senator, because we have an ineffective senator who's 81 and it's not going anywhere.
No.
You know? I mean.
She doesn't care about her grandkids.
She doesn't care about her grandkids.
She probably has some.
She probably has a million.
Yeah.
That old-fashioned hair. She probably.
She's probably got great grandkids.
Exactly. Like, but the average age of the Senate is like 1 trillion years old.
Yeah, 74.
Every person in you're there is doddering and old. Yeah. This is young.
She can still remember
senator.
Her own name.
Exactly.
So she's winning.
Like,
right now.
She can still stand up.
Yeah.
Like, Harry Reid can't stand up without assistance.
Oh, Harry Reid broke his face over Christmas break.
It's
we
terrible.
Forgot about that.
I know.
So many things happened over Christmas break.
Usually break is a busy time for
politics doesn't have any news over no. Christmas break, but
Harry Reid
had a gym accident.
I know.
The only way that you break your face at the gym, honestly, I think, is if you fall face first while you're on the treadmill.
That's definitely what he did.
How is there not video of that?
He wasn't weightlifting. The man can barely stand up.
I know.
The last time that I saw Harry Reid in person, I thought he was going to go shake my hand, and instead he grabbed my arm for stability as he walked by. Like, that's not the stability level of a person who's lifting weights or something. Like, he's a man who was walking slowly on a treadmill and fell down. And it's terrible, and I feel sad about what's happened to Harry Reid.
I hope he's okay.
Yeah. But this is all further proof that Barbara Boxer is way too young to think she can retire from the Senate and
right.
just
leave us high and dry like this. Yeah.
It is a bad time, Barbara Boxer. This is not the time to be fooling around with this kind of nonsense.
No.
Look at what Tom Harkin brought us.
Oh, God.
You know?
I don't think we'll go that route.
We're not in Iowa.
It's safer.
Right. But we lose as progressives when we get someone mediocre into that seat.
I agree.
She's a good seat, you know?
She's a good... Well,
if we get another Dianne Feinstein into the seat, then we lose.
I like the people who we have that supposedly could be filling the seat.
Right. Yeah, no, it's,
so
it's not
I feel,
looking
I feel
terrible.
Good about who is going to take
this Well,
and
she's told us in enough time to figure it out.
Yes,
we've
got 2 years.
She didn't
years.
Tom Harkin us.
No, she didn't.
With her...
No.
She's I think, going to help pick a successor. I think that's why she's mentioned it.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that a lot of people, of course, chimed in on this. I mean, she really is sort of like a progressive hero. She's been in the Senate since 92, which was crazy, but this is the last. That's the last time that we had an open Senate seat
I know.
In California.
I remember 92. When she came to the Senate because my grandparents donated to her campaign, and they kept getting all this. She gave out Boxers to her donors in the mail.
Yeah.
And I was like, who is Barbara Boxer? And they were like, a California person. And I was like, why do we care about this? But
right,
people were into
it.
She was progressive.
That's why. Yeah.
Also, she's a New Yorker. Like, she's from California, but she's a New Yorker. She's from Brooklyn.
She might be.
I think she is.
Okay.
You can hear it in her voice.
Yeah. Joe Biden called her his soulmate in the Senate, by the way, which is like, just leave it to him to... I'm excited for him to be running for president, too. I hope he's going to be up to that. I think he is.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he?
Why wouldn't he? What's he so busy with?
He's always got something insane to say.
I have some friends that are on his Christmas card list.
Oh.
And his Christmas card, like his official Christmas card.
Not his personal
Christmas card list. But was a picture of his family whitewater rafting. Which I was like, everyone sort of loves him, I think.
That's so good. They do.
He's sort of charming.
Yeah.
In any case. That was a digression.
Yeah.
Barbara Boxer.
Back to her.
Nancy Pelosi nearly cried in the press conference about this.
Obama said a lot of nice things about her.
Right. People are saying nice things.
We need to read the whole thing.
Right.
It's a very long quote that we have here that we could read from President Obama.
It's not interesting, though.
It's not interesting. No.
But we want to talk about who might be looking to take the seat.
Yes. And it's interesting because a lot of people have talked about California really sort of like being at a, you know, all of our, you know, statewide elected officials are Democrats. They have been.
Yeah, and we've been having great success with that, because when we didn't have that, we had the worst possible financial situation a state could have, and as soon as Democrats came in,
that cleaned up immediately, basically. That's what happens when you have a Democratic supermajority and a Democratic governor. Anyway, Jerry Brown, as everyone knows, is in his early hundreds.
Right.
We just said that Dianne Feinstein is 81, and Barbara Boxer is now retiring. So we've got a lot of oldsters who, Jerry Brown's not running for re-election.
Right.
Who knows about Dianne Feinstein? She just got elected. Wasn't
yeah,
she
I think
up this
she
last
just,
year?
I think she was, she's not going anywhere.
She's not going anywhere.
And P.S. Jerry Brown also just got reelected. So when we say he's not going up for reelection, we mean like in 4 years. We don't
Well, right. Yeah, exactly.
We don't mean recently.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, but we're going to have to find people someone to replace them.
But we have great...
We have great...
Great younger talent here.
Right, exactly. So a lot of people have been sort of, oh, who's going to run for all these seats with the old Democrats? Well, yeah. Good people. That's
right.
Who.
Yeah, we have a lot of those people.
Yeah. We have Gavin Newsom, who was going to be running for governor at one point, and he's now our lieutenant governor. He was the mayor of San Francisco.
Yeah. Everybody people loves, just love him.
People love him. I don't he's even, great. He's handsome. Right. He's... You know, he was big into the whole gay rights situation right, up in San Francisco long before that was sort of like, you know, yeah. a thing to do. So he's...
He was briefly married to a Fox News anchor, which is a bizarre thing.
I think, didn't he have a cheating scandal at some point?
Well, definitely.
I
mean,
yeah, but whatever.
It's very handsome.
I mean,
of course
he's a handsome
is.
Politician. Yeah. He's screwing everybody.
Exactly.
I mean, so who cares? Right? I mean, anyway. And then also our Attorney General... Attorney General...
Right.
Kamala Harris, Kamala Harris, no one knows.
Nobody it's knows. Like, everyone says
like,
it differently
like
in the whole
Pamela
state.
With a K, right. apparently. But she's awesome. Everybody yeah. loves the shit out of her, too. She
so
was
true.
Also gay marrying people. I know yeah. all of these people based on their...
They're gay marrying of people.
Right.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
And then we have our very own Antonio yeah. Villaraigosa.
Yeah, who basically declared his candidacy this yeah. week, said that he was seriously looking at it. I think
well,
he
what's
would...
he so busy with?
Yeah, he's
not mayor
anything.
Anymore.
No.
You know, he's just hanging out.
I'm sort of surprised that... I mean, I guess it makes sense, a Senate run. There were a lot of people who sort of, after he was no longer the mayor here, thought that maybe he would have sort of, like, national aspirations. And
right.
I think that he sort of has the credentials to do so. I mean, the mayor of Los Angeles, he's, you know, he's
right,
Hispanic.
That's a big...
I mean, you know, I think that...
I will say that being the mayor of a major city, if New York City is any guide, is a road to nowhere.
No, it is. You're
I
right.
mean, it being in state office is
right.
a road to somewhere, but... So, like,
he
any
seems
of these...
like he could
Kamala
have,
Harris and Gavin Newsom are all people, I think, who have credibility on the national
right.
stage. I think it would be interesting if he ran. I mean, it certainly would... It would be nice to have a Latino... senator from
yeah,
California because
I agree.
The whole fucking state is Latino. Like,
I know.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
But
it's interesting because...
It's going to be hard as a mayoral person, as a, you know, as a mayor to
right.
make that
It's interesting
leap.
Because those three people are so clearly the people who would take over these three spots.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how it all sort of shakes out. Do these three people all end up in a primary against each other to,
right.
to run for Barbara Boxer's seat? Does somebody decide that they are going to
okay.
be the
well,
governor
I hope they
when
all
Jerry
end up
Brown?
In a primary.
I mean, Gavin Newsom sort of makes the most sense to sort of like be the governor. He's the lieutenant
right.
governor now, but like, what does he want to do? Does Dianne Feinstein be a senator until she's 117? Like,
have a,
who kn- I mean, you
I have some theories.
Yeah.
Or some thoughts. Not theories. They're not theories.
Lay them on me.
I think that Gavin Newsom should be the governor.
Yeah.
Because he could be the president if he wants to.
Well,
after.
People
once you've
think,
been the governor of a big state like California,
yeah.
you can go anywhere
people
from there.
People think that that is sort of like his plan.
Yeah. And I think that would be a smart plan for him. I think that he could be anything he wanted to be after
He was
that.
Running for governor until Jerry Brown sort of like became
right.
a big behemoth in that race.
Exactly.
Like he is a known, he's a person who wants, we know he wants to be the
yeah.
governor.
And he's, at this point, he's well-liked. He's now been working with this administration that's
he
well-liked.
Win.
He would win. Like that would
yeah.
be an easy, I think that's an easy plan for him
right. the
that
thing
could
about
lead
these,
him to anything in the future that
the,
he could ever
The thing
want.
About all of these people is that all of these people will win. That's why I think it's interesting
well, yeah.
as
It'd be
to
interesting
whether
if they all
like,
ran.
They, right, exactly. Because like, if they decided which of them wanted to run for what, then they would
I,
all be the winner of said race.
I think it would
but.
Be, if Kamala Harris ran, I think that that is a, that's a, inter, that's a good move for her, I think.
I think so too. And especially
and
if Barbara Boxer.
And I think that she
Boxer,
also could be prom, because it would be nice if we get a woman in there.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think Barbara Boxer is sort of, as we said, going to, probably doing this now because she wants to help pick a successor.
Yeah.
And she seems sort of like the clear
yeah.
person there. I like Antonio Villaraigosa, but I mean, it just seems
sure,
to make
that,
sense that she
but
be
she
the
also
person.
Is sort of prominent enough statewide that she, because this is a statewide seat, it's not a low, you know.
And
I
loved.
Think,
I mean,
I
there
think
are
that
very
Villaraigosa
few,
should go to Congress.
I agree. There are very few states where you can find people walking around talking about loving their attorney general.
Exactly.
Like, that's not
or,
a thing.
Or knowing the name of
but
their
in,
attorney
but
general.
But in California, that's
yeah,
a thing.
Everyone loves...
People know who she is
yeah.
and love her to
yeah.
death. I mean, like, that's... It's a thing.
It's a thing.
Loving her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that that would... I think that she has... That's, like, the smartest career... Like, she's the person who gains the most from that move.
Yeah.
Because I think Gavin Newsom could be... After he's been governor, he could be anything. So, like, he has so many more options.
Because
yeah. I don't think that she's going to run for governor,
too.
And he's younger. Yeah.
Villaraigosa, I think, is in his 60s.
Yeah.
Which,
And it's like, we don't need any more old men in there. Yeah. Whatever.
There's some Republicans, too, but who cares about them? They're not going to win.
Well, also, people are talking about Eric Garcetti. Like, that's...
Well, he already said that he wasn't going to do it. Oh, he did? But that doesn't mean anything.
I mean, people have been talking about it. I don't know why he would. He just became the mayor. And this is a cush appointment, being the mayor of Los Angeles. It's not easy. It's a big city, and it's a crazy city. But, I mean, like, once you've been, like, you just sort of... Once you're the mayor of, like, the second biggest city in the country, like, just ride it.
Yeah.
Ride it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next. This is the one that we sort of posted.
People going to jail.
This was our, you know, we gave you a Christmas present of ethics violations.
Yes, exactly.
this year.
Michael Grimm, the congressperson from Staten Island and a small piece of Brooklyn, he finally resigned because he pleaded, first of all, he ran knowing he was facing felony tax charges, but then he pleaded guilty to the tax charges.
Right after getting reelected.
So it was like he already knew that he wasn't going to be able to serve his term, and then he was going to try to stay.
I was going to say, he initially said that he was not going to resign.
And then everyone was like, listen, buddy.
Right.
Slow your roll. So he's now...
He basically got forced into resignation.
He basically got forced into resignation by just shaming him, because he wasn't shameable, because people from Staten Island, I guess, aren't. I don't know.
Apparently not.
In any case, the only real update we have about this is that on Friday he made his first public appearance at a pool hall in Staten Island, where apparently everyone suddenly put in to play against him. And so it kind of like the pool hall got real rowdy and crowded, and he beat two people and then left.
Oh. He dominated, apparently, is the quote.
According to someone from Staten Island.
Right. Who was drunk at the time and probably a big fan of Michael Grimm.
Exactly. Well, everyone there is.
Yeah.
If there's... They love a slimy... congressperson in Staten Island. Vito Fisella got booted out of office after a sex scandal of some sort. Mm-hmm. He was Michael Grimm's, you know, the person who had the predecessor. Mm-hmm. And then Michael Grimm, there was no way that guy wasn't up to shenanigans. You take one look at him, you know that.
For sure.
That's not... Everyone in Staten Island knows that you only get elected there if you, like, know where the bodies are buried. Like, that's...
Right.
It's that kind of a place.
Well, wasn't he, like, running his, like, family's Italian restaurant or something, too? I mean, like, before being a congressperson? Yeah. Like, I mean, I think that
he was
sort of,
also, like, an FBI agent or something. Like, there was some sort of, like... he's a former FBI agent.
Oh, okay.
And he... But he was... He had owned a restaurant called Healthalicious.
Oh,
and he failed to report $900,000 in revenue from it.
Oh, sure.
And then... lied in a case that was brought by the employees of Healthalicious. Like, tax felony.
Yeah.
That's what he committed.
But if you would think that they're trying to get away from slimy people to fill the seat...
It's Staten Island. What people are they going to go to? Who do they have? The person who's been most discussed as the potential successor is Daniel Donovan, who is the Staten Island DA who oversaw the grand jury that did not indict the officer who killed Eric Garner.
I mean, people.
Like...
Think of what you're doing here.
And that guy's been trying to curry favor with the party chairman in Staten Island. And what I love about this is there's like a real like sort of gangster element to the way they talk about this, because the district is about 75% Staten Island and like 25% Brooklyn. So theoretically, they're like, we got to consult with the Brooklyn people. They have a person too. But we dominate them. We don't care what they think. Like, so basically, 25% of their district is being bullied into accepting this asshole because Staten Island is like a fucking mob scene over there. Like, in any case, so that's, you know, there had even been some discussion about trying to appoint Vito Fisella to take over for a while, which was like, guys.
Come on.
You don't sink that low. I mean, you're sinking pretty low here.
You have to have at least one better person.
You got to have standards somewhere. Yeah. You don't have a lot of them, I guess, but
no.
That district is such a shit show, though.
Well, it sounds like.
And Vito Fisella was actually pretty strong on 9/11 health issues because... Staten Island is entirely made up of, like, firemen and cops.
Yeah.
So they had a real stake in it. So we used to run into him all the time at press conferences and things like that. He was always, like... I mean, he was never, like, a sleaze to us because we didn't talk to him because he knew that we were not his people. But he always looked so out of place in the New York contingent. Yeah. Like, you know, it's a bunch of, like, sort of rowdy Jewish people, whatever. And he was, like, always, like, slicked back hair. Like, he looked so Staten Island. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And Michael Grimm looked just like him.
Yeah.
Other politicians committing crimes.
Yeah.
Bob McDonnell is going to jail for two years. Governor Giftey going to jail. That's right. He got sentenced to 24 months in prison and then 24 months of supervised release for his 11 counts of corruption.
Yeah.
That's not a lot.
The prosecution was going, but I think like all of the amount of time that he could have spent in was something like 20-some years or something like
and
that.
And they were the prosecution was seeking 10 to 12.
So the fact that he only got...
His team was seeking 6,000 hours of community service.
Which is like, not anything that has ever been...
That's never been done.
That's not the solution to this. This article said that, like, that has literally never been done. There's, like, one case where, like, somebody got, like, 5,000 hours, but, like, it was also, like, with jail time.
Exactly.
So, like, 6,000 hours of community service is not an actual punishment that people are getting. So,
well, and the reason that they were seeking 10 to 12 years for the prosecution was because he basically, they said he basically shows no remorse because he keeps trying to blame his wife for it. So it's like he doesn't understand what happened that he did. He just keeps being like, but Maureen was such good friends with that guy. And, like, his wife, and because of that, the trial was... As hilarious. We have told you about repeatedly, like, the trial was hilarious because there was, like, the marriage was, like, crumbling in the trial. Like, all these, like, cracks were forming in the marriage or had formed in the marriage. It was sad and hilarious and awkward as all get out. But his and Maureen McDonald is not going to be sentenced until February 20th, so we don't know what her sentence is going to be like.
Something.
But, yeah, but basically, like, he blamed her the entire time, and then right before he got sentenced, asked the judge to be merciful with her.
Well, it wasn't.
It's her fault, but don't.
Right, I know. I blamed her through the entire trial. I blamed her through the entire thing because
everything
please.
That's happening to me is her fault. But please be nice.
Right.
You know, it's like. Oh, God. But that's not showing remorse because he did commit crimes.
Yes.
Lest we fail to mention that.
Yeah.
Like it was not Maureen McDonald was friends with the guy, but she was also not an elected official.
No.
So
she wasn't the governor of Virginia.
She's allowed to be friends with anyone she wants.
Yeah, she can be. Speaking of people who should be in jail that aren't in jail, but maybe might be in jail.
Well,
again,
in custody.
In custody. Yeah,
certainly in police custody.
George Zimmerman.
Back in jail. Back in custody.
Got arrested this week in connection with a domestic disturbance.
What a shocker.
In Central Florida, which, I mean,
none of those things are shocking. None of the words in that sentence shock me.
Nope.
Domestic disturbance, Central Florida, George Zimmerman.
Yeah.
Here's a few things.
That's a sentence that makes a ton lot of sense.
Yeah. Not like what we saw earlier when we, what was it like, bacon jerky? It was like
sweet sriracha
bacon jerky.
Uncured
I would just
think
all
something.
Words that just have
Trader
to do with
Joe's.
Food that
sounded delicious, but I didn't know what it was going to taste like.
No, it didn't sound like a thing. This sounds very much like a thing.
Sounds like a thing.
I would caution the women of Florida that if you're looking for a husband or boyfriend. You can probably even in Florida do better than George Zimmerman.
Well,
the man is an actual murderer. I know that we decided that he murdered in some sort of weird twisted self-defense. And in Florida, maybe that flies. I don't know. But regardless of whether or not that was the reason that he
murdered
Trayvon Martin, he murdered a person.
Right.
Like when,
regardless of what the law in Florida is.
Exactly. Like we can all agree because he admitted to us that he did this.
Right. He's a man who killed another
man. He's a man who killed another man.
Right.
So that's a good person to not date.
Yeah,
first domestic disturbance he's been arrested for.
No, and I think, like, the report was, like, that he threw a bottle of wine at her or something like that. And
classic.
I would, you know, I am not in favor of domestic violence, obviously.
Right.
But this is a woman who deserves to have wine thrown at her. I mean, she's dating George Zimmerman.
Don't be doing that.
We should all throw wine at her. She's a fucking idiot.
Well, and he pointed a gun at his girlfriend in 2013 and got arrested for that.
Yeah. Well, and wasn't he married, too, at one point? Like, wasn't he married at the time? I mean, like,
his marriage didn't last.
No, it didn't last.
Surprise.
I mean, come on. Don't be dating George
Women
Zimmerman.
Women of Central Florida. Try even just a little harder.
I know he's a celebrity.
And in
Florida,
that might be
enough. Dating a celebrity sounds exciting.
But this is not the right kind
of
celebrity.
One.
This is not the one.
No.
No, find an ex-boy band
Chris
member
Brown
and move on with
celebrity.
Your life. Right.
I don't want to date him.
No, of course
I'm trying
not.
Trying to have my ear bit off by Chris Brown.
No, disgusting.
You don't want that.
No.
Do better.
There is an ex-boy band member somewhere in the Orlando area that you can hit your star to if you need to. Like,
that's right.
Go to it. Don't do this. This
that's right.
is not a plan.
Yeah.
In any case, this was a... You may wonder how this ended up so far in the podcast.
I know.
And we're going to tell you.
Right.
Because we've decided this year that as much as we enjoy reporting on certain international news stories because they're relevant to domestic policy, what we started this podcast to report on and what we care about the most is American electoral politics. And North Korea.
Right.
So, as you know, there was a really gruesome shooting in France.
Yeah.
Where 12 people were killed at a satirical magazine that publishes comics that sort of poke fun at Islamic extremism.
The three gunmen were later killed.
They were killed. There was a huge march in Paris today with
like 3.7 million people.
7 million people.
The biggest march in France.
It's what
ever.
The Je suis Charlie hashtag is all about.
Yep.
And that's what we're going to tell you about it because you've heard the rest.
Yeah, you know it.
You know it.
You've been watching
the news. We've been watching the news. We have nothing more to share. So instead, we're going to talk about a bombing that the mainstream media did not cover excessively for 24-hour news cycles straight, which is a bombing that took place at an NAACP office in Colorado Springs, where someone planted an explosive device next to the Colorado Springs NAACP. The FBI ruled that it was a deliberate explosion.
Yep.
This is not... I mean, the NAACP is not... This is not a foreign concept to the NAACP. They spent much of history
not at all.
Having themselves bombed in various locations. But it is troubling, maybe not surprising in Colorado Springs, of all places. Yeah. But it is troubling because it got almost no mainstream coverage.
No coverage. Got a lot of Twitter coverage.
A lot of Twitter coverage.
Thankfully.
Thankfully. Well, I think because people were sort of like, you know.
They were mad that they,
We have discussed nothing but racial issues in the news in the last few months. And that is because people got, you know, the news wasn't going to cover Ferguson. It wasn't going to cover, you know, the Michael Brown protests and the Eric Garner protests and all of these other things that sprang up only because social media was so, you know, involved.
Right.
So this was another issue, I think, where people were sort of like, do we really have to drive the story from Twitter in order to get mainstream media to cover this, like, overtly racist act? And, like, is there a double standard in terms of what the media will and won't cover when it comes to these types of things?
Yeah.
Because there sort of seems to be. And this is sort of troubling because it, unless, as they say at the end, as the spokesperson from NAACP said, unless they were targeting the hair salon next door, like, this is obviously an intentionally racist act.
Right.
And the suspect is a 40-year-old balding white male. But another weird thing was that all of the outlets that finally did report on it, like, failed to mention his race, even though they always mention someone's race if it's a black person
that's
suspected of the crime.
Yeah.
So they sort of, like, failed to mention that he was white.
Yeah.
Which, you know, maybe that's not rocket science to figure out with an NAACP bombing.
Right.
But also, like, that's a double standard that we can sort of identify quite readily.
Yeah.
In any case, it was sort of interesting to see how people on social media have really sort of taken responsibility for a lot of these stories. Because this, a lot of the news that has been the most, I mean, sort of in the Occupy style of news reporting, lot of the news that has been most influential in the last year, but also in the last few years, has really been driven by social media and people being like, wait a minute, like, I get that, you know, that in France they had this terribly tragic thing, but, like, also, like, you shouldn't have a double standard when it comes to covering domestic terrorism.
Right.
Like, you know,
that's what that was.
And that was an act of domestic terrorism. So, in any case, that's what we'll say about that. And now we will talk about North Korea, our favorite topic.
Yeah. Right after telling you that we're not going to talk about international.
Well, we said except for North Korea, our favorite. Yeah. North Korea news is fair game always.
It's fair game because it's always hilarious. And also, but, you know, I mean, it's like you and I were talking about. It's like, international news is sort of like, yes, it sometimes affects us.
Right.
But, like,
we care about it as it pertains to us going to war, as it pertains to our, you know, international policy.
And feel it's important for you to, we're not telling you to ignore it.
No, you
shouldn't. And we didn't ignore it either. We could tell you about it because we're geniuses.
Obviously. We read the newspaper.
Right.
But that's not what we started the podcast to focus on.
No.
So we're only going to focus on the things
that
we care about.
I talked about the Middle East politics way too much in 2014.
I know. So much.
If we weren't doing the podcast, I probably wouldn't have known as much about it as I ended up knowing. But I found myself maybe not wanting to know all that much about it. I wish I were more ignorant about that.
It's really disturbing
stuff. I talked about it too much last year.
It's really disturbing stuff.
I'm putting an end to it.
Yeah. No, North Korea, though, is a separate story.
It's a completely different story.
Now, as you may have heard, the interview did end up getting released in theaters, smaller theaters, on Christmas Day.
Right.
And those
Didn't
see it. Now that it's out, I don't feel I need to.
I was never going to.
They showed it at work before they announced that they weren't going to release it.
Right.
And I was like, oh, shit, I should have gone to see that. Yeah. Because now I'll never get, now I'm going to be, I could have been one of the people who saw it.
We could have rented it on the Apple TV last
and
night.
Then as soon as they released it again, I was like, thank God, because I did not want to see it.
Yeah.
And so now I never have to.
Yeah.
But in any case, it went to theaters. It made the most money in online sales in Sony history. It made like $25 million or more even in online sales, which is a huge number.
Yeah. Hasn't made back all of the money that it cost to make it and to market.
No, but I think it probably will at some point.
Or get close anyway.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
it's not going to be a huge loss.
It's brought some attention to the Sony lineup in general that maybe maybe they were having trouble with all those Adam Sandler movies they were releasing getting attention to. So, you know, I think it'll probably turn out to have been a wash for them. Maybe not the hacking element of it, but the release element of it.
Yeah.
Here's what's going on in North Korea, though, in the aftermath of this. One is that there is a group called Fighters for a Free North Korea, which is a human rights group slash comedy group, I guess, in South Korea that has been dropping smuggled copies of The Interview on North Korea in balloons. They love doing that, by the way.
Yeah, they were doing it with choco cakes,
remember,
right?
The choco pies. Choco pies, Brent. Don't be an idiot.
Sorry.
On.
Choco pies.
Choco pies. So they're dropping copies of The Interview on North Korea.
Yeah.
From the sky, which is, I think, hilarious.
Yeah, it's great.
And there's sort of like a lot of discussion about whether the South Korean government is going to stop them or not, and nobody right. really knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, they didn't.
Because they didn't, right. They were talking about it, and then they didn't do it.
They said back into, this group said like back in December that they were going to do this, and then the South Korean government was going to decide whether they were going to let them, and a lot of people felt like that they were not going to let them because it would sort of, they're supposedly kind of like fake trying to work on their shit over there, basically.
A couple diplomats that came recently to South Korea to have diplomatic talks.
So everybody sort of felt like that the South Korean government was going to maybe kindly tell them to not do this, and they did not.
Did not.
They told them to carry on.
Carry on.
Yeah.
So that's hilarious. Yeah. Less hilarious, but we imposed new sanctions on North Korea over all of this Sony hacking business. Although, I keep seeing stories where people are like, but we don't really know if it was North Korea, but we're just going with it. We've had these doubts this whole time.
Yeah,
I have specifically had these doubts. For a really long time.
You've been at the forefront.
Of having doubts.
Of the doubts.
I still have my doubts. My doubts continue to be doubts. But there's like a new news story every 5 seconds that's like, you know.
Maybe they didn't.
So nobody, we still don't have any updates on that. But we do know that we sanctioned them regardless of whether or not they did it.
Right.
They're willing to
help us figure out who did it, though.
Yeah. No, yeah. They can be trusted to do that.
Right.
They're so helpful. Uh-huh. So we're sanctioning 3 companies and 10 North Korean government officials. I would argue that this is a completely ineffective strategy toward, I mean.
Right?
What toward is them? What like, about? Towards North Korea, who already is facing sanctions from us. And, like, how much business are we engaged with 3 companies and 10 North Korean government officials? That, like,
come on.
Is their economy losing money over this?
No.
Ooh, you know.
Also, don't they not have any? Anymore?
Right. Exactly. Well, they don't. So losing money isn't useless proposition to them.
Yeah.
As I was researching, though, various news stories that claim that they weren't involved or were involved or whatever, I did learn something important. Because as we know, there were a lot of internet outages in North Korea in the aftermath of the news that these attacks had come from potentially.
Dozen people who have the internet in North Korea.
The dozen people with access to the internet were losing internet intermittently for weeks. I mean, it kept going out.
Yeah.
So I was perusing the internet, reading stories about the internet, and stumbled on what I think is the most disturbing piece of internet news I've ever discovered, which is that the internet in much of Asia, and I guess the world, is not delivered via satellite or other high-tech thingamajigger.
Wires.
It's delivered via wires under the sea. And you know what's happening to those wires? Sharks are eating them. There is this video online of sharks trying to bite through the cables that connect Vietnam to the internet.
This can't be real.
It's real. It's a video of sharks doing that, and it was on a real news source.
No.
Sharks are eating the internet. And Vietnam was suffering outages because of it. Which leads me to believe that potentially the outages in North Korea are related to shark attack and have nothing to do with anyone. Because how can we know?
Oh my God.
Sharks are the worst internet terrorists there are.
Wow.
But who
knew?
Guys, we don't have a better strategy for delivering the internet than wires under the sea. There shouldn't be a single place that's connected to the internet via wire under the sea. That shouldn't be a thing that exists. We have invented satellites already. Like, there's got to be a better way. There just has to be. I refuse to accept this as the solution.
Yeah.
So
we know that North Korea can't get a satellite.
No.
That's
true.
Wire under the sea wires is their only hope.
Vietnam, internet. I wish, was doing better, though. Yeah. I feel like they could be doing better.
Yeah.
Maybe eaten by internet sharks. Yeah. In any case, in final news, and I think we posted about this at some point.
Yeah, you did.
But we wanted to re-bring your attention to a hilarious editorial that was in the Frederick News Post in Virginia, which is a local paper in Virginia, where one of their local councilmen, Kirby DeLauder, decided to try to sue the newspaper for using his name without his permission.
That's it.
He's an elected official. So they wrote the world's most hilarious op-ed or editorial about this that was entitled Kirby DeLauder, Kirby DeLauder, Kirby DeLauder, where they repeatedly use his name over and over in the most hilarious ways, including like, you know, roundabout then we worried if it's not a joke, how should we refer to Kirby DeLauder if we can't use his name? Parentheses, Kirby DeLauder. Could we get away with an entire editorial of nothing but Kirby DeLauder repeated over and over again? Kirby DeLauder, Kirby DeLauder, Kirby DeLauder. Like, it just goes on
really
in this
funny.
Vein. Forever, and we recommend that you read it. It's on our Facebook page, so you can
good work, local news.
Yeah,
by the way.
Well, and they were basically like, it's a laughable note. You know, we have this thing called the First Amendment. Like, this is a laughable notion. And they quoted somebody who, you know, some professor or something that they were talking to from UCLA, who said, in our country, newspapers are actually allowed to write about elected officials and others with their permission. It's an avant-garde experiment, to be sure, but we've had some success with it. So,
oh boy. Bless his heart.
Bless his heart. Or not.
No.
Screw yourself. He's an idiot. Kirby DeLauder.
Yeah.
And we're going to write your name on our website, too.
We sure are.
In any case, that's the news this week. We're back to our regularly scheduled programming, so you will hear from us every week from now on.
That's right. We're not going anywhere.
We're not going anywhere. You're stuck with us. So,
yeah.
And if your New Year's resolution was to follow the news,
yes,
and you are done with cereal,
that's right,
then I'm why not give us a try? Brent hasn't started. I finally listened to it, and then Brent told me that he was worried that it was going to be like a Dateline episode, and I was like, you really need to dispel yourself of that notion. Because I finally listened to it, and as much as I hate crime stories or anything to do with anything,
it's like a crime thing, so I was expecting it really to be like one of those like Friday night Dateline episodes.
No, but it's like a really exciting thing for podcasting, I think.
Well, true.
It's brought a lot of attention to podcasts. That's true. And it's really engrossing. It's like a giant This American Life episode.
All right, I got it. I'm with you. Yeah. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I think you should. So we will see you next week.
Yeah.
And then you will know the news from next week, too.
That's right.
Bye.
Bye.